behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. As always, we are joined with our super producer. Today, we have Alex Splash Williams on the ones and twos.
Splash.
They're not all going to be brilliant, brilliant hints about the episode disguised as a middle name.
Apparently. So. Yeah. Well, it's all right. We'll work on it, though, right?
We'll work on it.
We always promise to work on it, and we sometimes do.
So recently, Scott, you and I received a great listener suggestion from a longtime friend of the show, Rudy.
Yeah, that's right. Rudy Smith wrote in and said that, he says, I recall you did a podcast on amphibious cars, but I don't recall whether you covered the broader topic of amphibious vehicles in a dedicated podcast. Now, they're really fascinating vehicles, and there are many types of them. The gist of the previous podcast, which I think may have been a high-speed stuff episode. Which it was, because I looked into this a long, long time ago. I want to say it's like 2009 when we did this this last amphibious cars episode.
2009?
Yeah, and he said, I think, and he's right, he said, I think it had to do with the question of buying an amphibious car instead of a boat. So that was kind of the thrust of the last episode.
Oh, yeah.
And so this one, I guess maybe we can talk a little bit more about, well, first of all, it's a great suggestion, so thank you, Rudy.
Thanks.
And some of these older topics, yeah, we need to brush up on some of them. I mean, they were either covered, you know, for... Sometimes there were 10 or 15 minute episodes to begin with. And then also we, well, we've refined our game a little bit. You know, we include more in every podcast now.
Yeah, we're what you could confidently call less worse.
less worse is a good way to describe it. Yeah, that's I like that.
Nice. Well, seriously, we do, in the beginning we had shorter shows.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we relied more on our notes back then, right? And now we're a little bit more free form, I suppose. We're a little bit looser, you know, with our conversation between each other, right?
Yeah, sure.
A little
less
scripted, I guess.
2009?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. So I think we've got a lot to add to this one. It's not that there's been, you know, some dramatic increase in the amphibious vehicles available or anything like that. And there's plenty out there, but we just didn't cover it in the way that I think we would today. So let's do that now. How about
that? Okay. Yeah. So let's start at the beginning with just a little bit of background and some history. If you check out our older podcast on amphibious cars, you know, please be kind, but also don't worry because we're not going to duplicate too much information there. And that show will still be, what should we call it? Let's call it worth a listen, but worth an update.
Relatively relevant.
I like that. Yeah. That's a good one. Mm. So some of the earliest amphibious vehicles were, this is weird. I didn't know it dated this far back, were in the 18th century, the late 18th century. We're talking like the 1770s?
Yeah, crazy, isn't it?
Right?
A carriage, right? An amphibious carriage, which, I mean, clearly it wasn't powered on its own.
No, yeah.
That comes later.
Not super glamorous, because remember, the horses probably can't go into water of depth, right?
Yeah.
So we're talking about a carriage that people would push into the water and then pull out of the water.
Okay, a little low tech.
But right? It was amphibious, and that was designed by a prince. A real-life prince named Raimondo di Sangro. Mm-hmm. So we know he designed it sometime around or before July 1770. And then after that, shortly after, within about a decade, somebody else designed one.
Well, what took so long? A decade to design another one. I guess maybe they saw it on their travels and decided to give it a go. Mm-hmm. But then a little bit later, around 1805, there was a steam-powered version of this. So it was more of a steam-powered wheel dredging barge. And it has a name that I don't even know if I'm going to become close to getting in this podcast, but I'll try. Orctor Amphibuloso.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be the name of a Beirut album.
That's close enough. You know, it's something like that, right?
Right. So the important thing here is that this was powered. So it was powered by steam, but powered nonetheless.
Yeah, built in the United States by a guy named Oliver Evans. Again, it was in 1805. And here's the thing, though. Even though it was powered, it had its own steam power. There is some, you know, a little bit of dispute whether it actually traveled on its own. If it actually was able to steam on its own power on land and in water.
And Oliver Evans was one of the first steam engine builders in the United States.
Yeah, pioneer in the industry. And then get this, there's another guy that comes along a couple decades later after that. Mm-hmm. The guy's name is Gale Borden. And Gale Borden, you might recognize this name from condensed milk. This is Borden of Borden's Condensed Milk. They designed and tested a sail powered wagon in 1849. It tipped over when it got about 50 feet out. So
yeah, because it was a decent wagon, but it didn't, they forgot some things that you need to include with a sailboat.
Yeah, like ballast.
Right.
I forgot about the ballast. So, the force of the wind and the sail toppled it over and that was that. Moving on to about the 1870s, we have to go to Canada for this one. I guess Canada and the northern United States, that area. And this is where the logging companies had a powered amphibious tugboat that they called an alligator that could cross between lakes and rivers, which is a smart name for that, I think, by the way. Perfect name for it, an alligator.
Now, again, this is not – you can find pictures of the alligator online, and it's not like the most high-tech looking vehicle, but still, it does count as an amphibious vehicle.
All right, and now we're getting into, I guess, what you'd call the modern era of amphibious vehicles, if you want to call it that. Because in 1905, there was a guy that had a vehicle. This is actually the first, the first amphibious car, if you want to call it that. The first amphibious petrol-powered carriage. And the guy's name was T. Richmond. And this was a guy from Jessup, Iowa in the United States. And again, this is the first petrol-powered amphibious automobile. The automobile hadn't been around since until about 1885, somewhere around there, 1885, 1886.
Yeah.
This is 1905, and this is also a three-wheeled vehicle, just like, the very first car that was designed by Carl Benz.
Mm-hmm. What we're seeing here, this evolution is pretty apparent, right? We've got this still new technology in the automobile, right? In the internal combustion engine. So the first question is, how can we take something that already exists and either improve upon the design or expand the range of applications? Mm-hmm. So of course you want to make a boat. You want to make a boat, you want to make a plane, you want to make a spaceship, you want to make a drill, you want to make all of the things off of the, from this one core piece of DNA.
Yeah.
And of an engine.
Yeah, sure. And the idea is that, everything from about, outside of these oddball ones that were happening before, 1905 or around there, once we got up into about the 1920s, the amphibious vehicles had these really diverse designs, but they all had a purpose. The purpose was, or there are a couple of purposes, really, recreation, as you would expect.
Sure.
Expeditions, so, forging new territory, I guess, if you want to say it that way. And also search and rescue, and then, of course, military.
And military, as we're going to see, is one of the most wide-ranging applications, right?
Yeah, and then all this came together, all the practical designs, the impractical designs, all that. Around 1931, there's a guy named Peter Prell out of New Jersey, and his design, unlike all the others prior to this, could operate on rivers and on lakes and even in the sea. But the other thing is that it didn't have to have firm ground to enter or exit the water, because this one had a boat-like hull, and it also had tank-like tracks, which is an interesting adaption, finally. So, we have vehicles that – we'll talk about wheeled vehicles and tracked vehicles throughout this podcast, because they're examples of each. In fact, we're going to eventually get to a list of about 10 vehicles, and we'll go through really, really fast in this one. Not our typical top 10 list that we do for a full episode, but just to mention them and get the names out there and, let listeners do their own search and find out what they look like, because there's some really interesting thoughts and ideas out there still, in the modern amphibious vehicle world, I guess.
Yeah, and I want to, before we go too much further, I want to divide them into some classes, because not all amphibious vehicles are the same. Some are going to, this is something you'll notice, folks, when you look at these or when you are perhaps shopping for an amphibious vehicle, in which case your life is probably way more exciting than.
Yeah, that would be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So you'll see a range of these. Some are clearly adapted to spend more time in the water than on land. Mm-hmm. And some in others, the opposite is true. And it's just like a car that happens to float.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, like the Sherp.
Yeah. Like the Sherp. Yeah.
It can handle itself in the water, but it's not the best water vehicle.
Right. So there are wheeled vehicles, like an amphibious cycle.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Motorcycle or bicycle?
Bicycle.
Bicycle. Okay.
Yeah. Human-powered vehicle. And, of course, ATVs, all-terrain vehicles, also count as amphibious, right?
Going to have to look up a photo of the bicycle thing. Got to figure out how that works.
I can show you a photo.
That's probably hilarious.
Take a look and then describe it. I'm surprising Scott here. He hasn't seen this.
Oh, boy.
Wait, yeah. Have you seen this one?
No, I think I have it printed out somewhere, but that is ridiculous.
So it has these this amphibious bicycle has six, what would you call them, air bladders?
Orbs.
Orbs.
Just huge white balls, I guess.
Yeah, two are around the wheels. They're inflated around the rim of the wheel. And then there are four smaller ones, one at each point, right? When, you know,
yeah, what, to float you at about, like, shoulder
bars?
Like,
yeah.
Float you at about shoulder depth in the water, rather?
I'm not clear on how they pedal once they get into the water.
I just don't know, Ben. Maybe it requires contact with the ground, which, that's another thing, you know. Oh, man, we're going all over the place. You were doing some classification, right?
Right, yes.
And I derailed that, yeah. So I apologize, but some of these
vehicles.
I feel
like the bike was worth it.
So, take a look at the photos, you'll understand. But some of these vehicles do require contact with the surface beneath.
Right.
In order to move, those are the impractical ones. But let's move on.
Okay, so there are also amphibious cars, automobiles, car boats.
Mm-hmm. Lots of those.
Yeah, and one of them I think we mentioned in our previous podcast was the Amphibicar.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
One of the things about, just to spend some time on the cars, one of the interesting things with the cars is that most engineers have been searching for the holy grail of amphibious vehicles, which is a vehicle that is as fast and as efficient in the water as it is on the land, or on the land as it is in the water.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, well, I don't want to spoil the future yet, but for most of the history of this technology, you could choose one or the other.
All right. I have a viewpoint on this, and I think we'll get to it eventually, but I want to say it now while we're thinking about it.
Yeah.
We'll get to the top 10 list with some examples, but they're getting closer. They're getting closer to making a car that is a decent car,
uh-huh,
and a boat that is a decent boat in one package. But the thing is that you're going to have, and this is the way I feel about all of these, you're going to have a kind of a goofy looking car, and you're going to have a goofy looking boat. You know, it's not designed as the best looking boat out there. It's not designed as the best looking car.
Right.
It's kind of this mix of the two, and it never quite seems to look exactly right. I mean, it doesn't seem to translate once you take that vehicle into the water or once you take that vehicle out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something to it. It just doesn't quite do it for me. I don't know. Maybe other people have differing opinions, but to me, it just seems like it's never quite the full thing.
Scott, have you ever heard of that phenomenon called the uncanny valley?
Yes. Yeah.
So this is a psychological thing, but I think it applies here. The uncanny valley effect, it describes this discomfort people experience when they're looking at something that's not quite right. Mm-hmm. So,
but you can't quite place exactly why it's not
you
right.
You can't say exactly what's wrong, but you know something's off. And we hear this described a lot with people who get weirded out seeing maybe a stuffed animal or a wax sculpture that's lifelike.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it happens when people are watching computer generated images in video games.
Yeah. Of people.
Of people specifically.
Yes.
Because
they've almost got it.
Almost. Not quite. Yeah. Maybe when kids born today are in their 20s.
Yeah.
Or maybe faster. But the reason I bring this up is because a lot of amphibious vehicles, even the ones that are, you know, 90% boat or 90% auto,
mm-hmm,
they still look weird. And maybe sometimes they're good enough that you can't quite say, why does that boat look so ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, some of the features and some of the functions that they have to perform, require that they have that look. And again, we'll have to get through to our list at some point in this podcast, and we'll maybe be able to point out some of that. And if you want to follow along at home, please do, because, there's some interesting ones out there, and some look better than others, in my opinion. But they're doing a decent job
right.
of trying to blur the line between car and boat.
Before we get to the list, we will say that we have some other examples here. So oyster boats. Well, that's one thing we didn't talk about.
Oyster. Oh, you know what? That's a perfect
example. Because they're fishing, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great idea because, you think about when you're hunting oysters, it's right when the tide is out. So you're in the kind of muck and mud on the shoreline. You need something that is able to drag itself across the shore. And then also if the tide comes in, be able to, get back to the dock, right?
Right.
So it makes sense. That's a perfect use for a vehicle like this.
Oysters.
Are you going to say it like that the whole episode? Well, I guess we won't bring it up too often, but say it like that now. Sure. Why not? An oyster boat.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm having so much fun with that.
There's oyster boats. There's ATVs, right?
Right, yeah. And then it's difficult to overestimate the role that amphibious vehicles played in war, in World War II.
Yeah.
You know, we had, the human species had numerous amphibious trucks, of which the DUKW Duck was probably the most successful. It's a 6-wheel drive amphibious modification. It looks like someone took the chassis of a truck and then stuck a boat hull on it.
Yeah, like rammed it through the bottom of a boat. Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like.
And we can explore more of the historical military applications, but for now I would just say that the big divisions we should know about is that there are tracked amphibious vehicles, like Scott had mentioned the earlier one with treads, and then there are wheeled ones. There are a couple things that I feel are kind of gray area. So, for instance, some vehicles are not built to necessarily be amphibious. They're built to be water resistant, such to the point that they can like wade into deep water.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like past where a normal car would get water in the engine.
Yeah, I got it. You know what? Well, before we get past military, I want to mention one thing. If anybody is around the Lane Automobile Museum up in, I think it's in Tennessee. I want to say it's right outside of Nashville. Mm-hmm. That's just an amazing place. We've talked about that museum in the past, the basement tour and all that. They have a LARC vehicle there, an LARC. It's one of these huge amphibious vehicles that carries tanks or used to carry tanks. It's a wheeled vehicle, but it's enormous. I mean, you don't get any kind of sense of scale of this thing until you see somebody standing right next to the wheel. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of photos online of this thing, the one that they have. And there's really an interesting video of them bringing it to the museum. They had to drive it through downtown, wherever it was delivered from. And it's kind of funny. They did it late at night, of course.
And they're pretty rare, too, right?
They're pretty rare, yeah. I mean, and this is a running, driving example. And they've crushed cars with it and stuff like that in the past. I know they've used it there at the museum. But anyways, I thought I'd mention that they have one. But that's another example of, a vehicle that can carry, somewhere around 60 tons of cargo.
It's insane.
From water to land or vice versa.
It's insane. We should get one.
Yeah, definitely.
Just to have around the office.
That's great. Great idea. Could be the office.
There's a lake over, a pond over in that park across the street,
Oh, okay. Perfect.
We could do like tours.
Yeah.
Look, Scott, in this economy, I'm just trying to come up with some hustles.
Oh, it'd be fun. In a lot of towns, a lot of tourist towns, you find they run those duck boat tours, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly what the vehicle that we're talking about, but the large-scale version that can hold, 25, 30 people. Those are a popular thing for people to do. I mean, it's got to be a blast. I've never done one. I've never done a duck tour, and that's because every time we go to a town that has one, as I see it, because you see it driving around town with a load of people having fun, and you think, I want to go on that. Whenever you call over there, they're always full. They've always booked it, weeks or even months ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get onto one of those things. So I would love to do it sometime, but it takes a lot of, pre-planning. And that's not my game.
Yeah, some prior production.
Yeah, I just don't do that.
Well, speaking of things that we're not going to do, I don't think we should open the hovercraft bag of badgers today, because hovercrafts technically can be amphibious vehicles.
That's true. Yeah, that's right.
But I feel like they are a little bit different just because their function, their mechanical function, their process of locomotion is sufficiently different to put them in another category to get altogether.
If we stick with the vehicles that are tracked or wheeled, treads of some kind, or wheeled, I think that that's probably doing some justice to this topic today.
Although, if you are interested in hovercrafts and you have never heard of a chronoplans, check out our episode on that. They're not quite the same thing.
Close.
They're very close.
Yeah, was that the same episode? It might have been the same episode, but.
No way, seriously?
Yeah, maybe.
Do you remember when I went through that chronoplan phase?
I do, yes.
I wouldn't shut up about these things. They're fascinating.
Yeah, they really are cool.
But let's explore some types of amphibious vehicles after a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. And Ben, I think we were going to talk about some specifics now, right?
Yes.
All right.
Let's drill down into the actual vehicles themselves.
All right. Well, a couple different things here. We're going to get to this list of 10 in just a moment, but I want to bring up one company that is making something that kind of made the rounds on social media not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
You might have seen an RV that was amphibious. A full-scale, like, motor coach RV. I'm talking about the big, long ones. I don't know what length this is. It might be 60, 70 feet long. I'm not exactly sure.
The ones that look like a charter bus?
Yeah, exactly. The enormous RV. It was built by a company called CAMI. Now, CAMI stands for Cool Amphibious Manufacturers International. And this was founded in 1999 by a guy named John and his wife, Julie Giljam. I think it's Giljam. I hope it's Giljam. Anyways, they're out of South Carolina. And they started this amphibious business with an operation on Hilton Head Island, which sounds like a good place, right? And they had a tour company called Cool Stuff Tours, and they had it for many, many years. And they ran with this old, again, a Lark 5 vehicle, like we talked about, that was used back in 1963 during the Vietnam War. And they ran around with this, and it became cantankerous. You know, it became, more trouble than it was worth, really.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided they needed a new vehicle. So they were going to build a brand new vehicle, and they called it the Hydra Terra. And they built it from the ground up. So it's an all original vehicle. And you can find photos of the Hydra Terra online. It's again, something he built from the ground up. So it's a unique design, pretty interesting. I think it's bright yellow in the photo that I'm looking at right now. But, this really, this wasn't all he was destined to do. I mean, this guy decided that, I can build these vehicles that can go on water, can go on land. Why not make one that's really, really plush, really comfortable for, I don't know who the market would be for this really, but you've seen probably the photos of this RV in the water. It looks, it looks pretty ridiculous really. Because it doesn't really outwardly look like a boat in any way. I mean, maybe the front is a little bit different. And this vehicle is called the Terrawind Amphibious Motor Coach. Now, it's a luxury motor coach in every way. And it's got a giant bathtub and marble floors and leather furniture and all that, right? Mm-hmm. Just like any other luxury motor coach would have.
Right.
But you can drive it right down the boat ramp and into the lake. And it looks absolutely ridiculous in the water. It does. It really does. But it serves its purpose. It's watertight, right? And and able to do what they say it would do. So I guess somebody would want the thing. I mean, I don't know if they've sold this one or if they hang on to it, if it's their own vehicle. I'm not sure.
Have you watched the videos?
No, I've only seen the still photos. I didn't know there were videos.
Yeah, so
of
you
this.
Can see it rolling but, in. And the way that they have the rear of the vehicle has a nice design where it opens up like a back porch. So there's a little bit of, like a fishing dock.
Oh, like a swim platform.
Yeah, or a swim platform.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I guess that's multifunctional, but it
Well, I mean, to me, it looks top heavy. It looks like it's going to tip over. But I know I know that's taken care of in the design, but it appears to be top heavy.
It feels like it's for lakes. You know what I mean? Like smaller bodies of water where there's not a lot of open water movement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see
a lot of these amphibious vehicles. I'm glad you said that because a lot of these amphibious vehicles require calm waters. They're no good in heavy seas.
Yeah.
So, you're not going to take them out into the ocean. You're not going to take them on anything more than like a small lake, that's sheltered in some way or in a storm. you definitely wouldn't want to do that. They're not built for heavy waves. A lot of them aren't. One that probably is, though, is called, this is an unusual one. This is one I shared with you earlier, Ben. It's called the 7.1 meter sport rib. And I know that's a name that doesn't really roll off the tongue or anything,
right.
But the sport rib. And it's by a company called Sea Legs, which is a great name, Sea Legs. Ooh. And they make this amphibious vehicle that looks a lot like it's kind of like a Zodiac inflatable, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
And then it has two wheels at the back and one wheel at the front that kind of lower, almost like landing gear on an aircraft.
Mm-hmm. In a Delta design. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In Delta design. You're right. And they pivot down and see, I think you could transition to the water, you know, in like, I'm talking like 3-5 seconds, something like that. It's really, really quick. But you drive in and it doesn't look like it's meant really for much on-road use, really. It looks like it's more of a boat than it is a car. But the idea, I think, behind this one is that it allows you to launch your own boat. So if you don't have a partner, a helper, somebody that can help you, you know, back the boat up and, you know, unload at the dock and everything, this makes it just a lot simpler. You can drive right down the boat launch and right into the water and then drive right back out at the end. And it shows all the features of this thing. It has all-wheel drive, which is a three-wheel drive.
Yeah. Kind of funny.
It has an automatic braking system, so it has they call it ABS, but okay. It has extended run time. I guess there's a battery for that, so for extended run. Power steering is another thing that it has. Power steering? What does it need power steering for? That seems kind of crazy.
I mean, you know how it is. If you're trying to sell something, you got to list all the features.
What, are you going to try to parallel park this thing?
Maybe.
Take a look at the photos of the 7.1 meter sport rib by Sea Legs and tell me what you think. I mean, clearly this is a boat that that can make it onto land, but it's definitely not intended to be driven on city roads, really.
Right. Yeah, I completely agree.
It's kind of like an around the marina type vehicle, I would think.
Mm-hmm. And you might have to parallel park because marinas can get crowded.
Well, I guess so.
And maybe there's not enough room at the dock, so you just park it in the lot.
Oh, you know what? That's pretty smart.
Maybe that's what people are doing. Maybe they're hacking the parking situation.
I guess you're right. It'd kind of work either way, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I'll just float this sucker. Why not? You know, that might work actually, but you know, it's got some funny features. And again, it's just kind of an oddity, you know, that when I'm sure that it's fun to own one of these, for the looks you get at the marina when you're cruising around. Hey, when you want to go to our top 10 list?
Yeah, let's go to the top 10.
Yeah, let's do that. And, there's a couple of them here by, the company called Gibbs. Now, Gibbs is something that we've talked about in the past. I know we talked about the Gibbs Aquata, mm-hmm. which is going to come up, but there's a new one here that I don't know if we've ever mentioned, the Gibbs Quad Ski.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. So it operates both as an ATV and, personal watercraft, almost like a jet ski and a four-wheeler combined. It's a four-stroke, top speed of 45 miles. And here we go. Remember we had talked earlier about the historical quest for dual efficiency.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And most amphibious vehicles were either great on water and awkward on land or great on land and just kind of frail in water.
Sure.
The Gibbs is not really either. It has, on both land and water, a top speed of 45 miles per hour.
Not bad.
The cool thing is when you get in the water, the wheels will retract.
Yeah.
And kind of fold up, so it's got a little bit of a transformer angle, too.
Yeah, a lot of these have that feature that, you know, the wheels retract almost like landing gear in an aircraft would, so that they're not, you know, creating any kind of drag underneath. And you'll find that with a lot of the vehicles that we're talking about. Now, this one in particular, this Gibbs Quad Ski, is one that I think blurs the line better than most of them on this list. I think that, you know, as you said, the performance is good on land and in water. Mm-hmm. It has a look that, you know, it looks enough like a current jet ski that, or, you know, a personal watercraft that, that it can pass for that. I mean, if you don't look closely enough, you know, from a far enough distance away, you might not even understand or see that there are wheels attached to this thing.
Right.
It has that look. And then I would guess that on land, it's just as capable as a four-wheeler,
mm-hmm.
as an ATV. There's a little bit that when we get to another Gibbs vehicle here, I wanted to give you just a little bit more about the quad ski along with the Aquata. But the next one on the list here is the old Amphicar.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with the Amphicar, which I think I referred to earlier in the show, but I said Amphibicar. I'm sorry, it's Amphicar. I just think Amphibicar is a cooler name.
It probably is a cooler name.
They didn't ask me.
Well, it's a car that was built in Berlin, Germany, in West Germany. About 80% of the vehicles, however, that were built there were sold in the United States. And I think that they thought that there was going to be a lot more of these purchased than were initially. So they made a whole bunch of them. So there's a lot of parts and pieces available for these cars. So if you're a collector, I know they're somewhat rare. I mean, you'll find them here and there. And I'll tell you in a moment just a place where I've seen a bunch of these together at once.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of parts and pieces available if you ever find one, if you want to restore one.
Yeah, they were, what, 61 through 65, I think?
Yeah.
And they only made 4,000?
I think they sold 4,000.
They sold 4,000, but they made more.
Yeah, they made, again, they made the parts and yeah, you know, stuff for lots more. So it's all out there. You can get the stuff for it. And one place that I've seen one recently is, many of them, I should say recently, is in a place called Disney Springs down in Orlando. It used to be, I think they used to call that area Downtown Disney, but you know, it's kind of like, maybe it was like Pleasure Island. I can't remember what they called it in the past. It was where all the bars and the restaurants and the shops and all that were. They still have all that, but they call it Disney Springs now. And they have a place called the Boathouse. And the Boathouse will offer like a lunch and a cruise. Or I think they call it the lunch and launch or something like that. And it's a, you know, like a package deal. Mm-hmm. Or you can just buy the boat ride if you want to. But they have a mini fleet of these amphicars that you can just, you know, go for a ride out or on their little lagoon area there. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long the ride is. It seems like it's about 10, 15 minutes long, somewhere around there. But you're in a genuine, authentic amphicar. You're not driving. You know, somebody else is taking care of that for you. But you get the thrill of being able to drive down the boat launch and right into the lake. Pretty cool.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, and I could stand there and watch that for hours, it seems. It's really fascinating. And people are just so excited when they do that for the first time. So, mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun to watch. Let's move on to the next one, which is, the Gibbs Aquata. Now, this is one that we've covered in the past. We've talked about it.
So cool.
It does look pretty cool. It looks fast. I think that this is the one that Richard Branson used to cross the English Channel, right?
I believe you're right.
Yeah, something like he did it like 1 hour and 40 minutes and 6 seconds, which is a new record. Mm-hmm. But it was a car that was never really sold. This is just he did it in a one-off vehicle, one that they provided for him.
Yeah, that was in March of 2004.
Yeah, and the reason that it never went on sale, I think they were ready to go into production. Cause this is a car that would do 100 miles per hour on land and 30 miles per hour on the water, or 26 knots, I guess we should say.
Not too bad.
Yeah, not bad. And it's not terrible. But the engine supplier, who was, Rover at the time, went out of business right around that time. And, the other thing that was going wrong for it was that U.S. safety regulations wouldn't allow this vehicle or wouldn't approve it for street use because they required things like airbags, which this is kind of crazy. Airbags on this vehicle, if you can picture this, every time you hit a big wave, there's a danger that the airbags would go off.
Right.
And they said, we can't do that. And, you know, the U.S. safety regulator said, well, I'm sorry, we can't license this for use on the street. Maybe it'll have some use, you know, on the lake or whatever, but, or on private land, but
it's not street legal.
You're severely limiting, the potential pool of people that want to buy this vehicle. So there were other things too, but the reason I wanted to bring up the quad ski again though was this is kind of like Gibbs' return into this amphibious vehicle thing because it's an ATV, it has a lot fewer requirements. It doesn't have to be certified for on-road use. Mm-hmm. It's an off-road vehicle and an on lake or on pond vehicle, I guess. So they don't have to worry about all the restrictions that they did with the Gibbs Aquata. So it's going to work out.
Hopefully.
I hope so.
Because so far, that's one of the more stylish vehicles we've seen.
Yeah.
Next up is the Rinspeed Splash.
Yeah.
So, yes, it is the same Rinspeed as the tuning firm out there in Switzerland called Rinspeed. And in 2004, the same year that Branson traverses the English Channel, they built this vehicle, the Splash. So the Splash is a little bit confusing. It can go 31 miles per hour on water if it uses this hydrofoil design.
Yeah.
It can cruise in water like a regular boat, you know, like under 30 knots.
Mm-hmm.
But on land, it can go 124 miles an hour.
Yeah. Now, you talked about the hydrofoils, right?
Yeah.
So it's a hydroplaning vehicle with hydrofoils underneath. And so what that means is you've probably seen vehicles like this that when at speed, the whole boat raises up or whole vehicle raises up. And it looks like it's on a couple of sticks, really. But there are hydrofoils underneath. So it's about 2 feet above the water surface. And the only thing in the water at that point is the prop, which is driving it, and the hydrofoil. So it's very efficient on the water, very fast on the water. And, it's a good design. It's really cool. I mean, it's got a 140 horsepower engine. It can get up to 62 miles per hour in about 5.9 seconds, which isn't bad. Mm-hmm. The maximum speed on land is 125 miles per hour. And on water, I think they said it can get up to 50 miles per hour on the water. With the hydrofoils.
Okay.
But I think the 30 that you had mentioned was with no hydrofoils. I think that's like cruising like a regular boat.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot of drag. But once it's up on those foils, look out.
And that's the thing. So yeah, the foils do retract. I was interested enough in this that I had to dig into a couple of different videos to see how they set it up.
It's a strange design. It really is. I mean, it's a folding vehicle. I mean, all these have incredible folding capabilities. It looks like like Transformers or something, it looks like an origami vehicle that folds itself up. But the next one is kind of cool. There's not a whole lot of information about this that I was able to dig up, but it's called the Sea Rotor. And it is a Lamborghini Countach that is designed to go on the lake. Now, strange looking, of course, going through the water. I love the Countach design, I always have, but this to me, Ben, I don't think I would invest in a floating Lamborghini Countach.
Why not, man?
I just don't think it's going to have the same performance on land as it would normally if it wasn't also a boat.
You got to dare to dream, though.
I guess so.
Think about what schmucks all those other Countach owners are going to feel like when you're racing to the lake and you keep, you know what? I can't do it. I wouldn't buy it either.
A guy named Mike Ryan, I guess, put this together, and he designed it to be amphibious, of course. And he said, taking a luxury sports car and turning it into an amphibious vehicle is very, very expensive. And he said, I think the glass alone, he mentioned, cost over $3,000 to do. So
technically 3,007.
I don't know. It's a funny idea. I mean, it really is. And it makes for good photos, really. But I just don't think that combining the two in this situation is a good idea.
Just with the way that the body design of the Countach, it does look like it could be it, when you just see the top of it, it does look like it could plausibly be a submarine.
Now, wasn't there submarine? Yeah, wasn't there one of the Cannonball Runs where the opening scene, I think a Countach skips across the lake? Like a flat stone would skip across the lake.
Yeah.
That's kind of a cool idea.
That's a cool idea.
Yeah. I mean, if you can do it, sure. Okay. The next one on our list.
Yeah.
We're getting back to Gibbs again.
Yeah. We're getting back to Gibbs. It's the Humdinga. And that is D-I-N-G-A.
That's a real Humdinga.
It is a 5-seater. This is a concept vehicle. It can do 160 kilometers on land and 65 on water. This is newer. It was announced in February of 2012, and they wanted to use it for remote and hostile terrain because on land, this is 4-wheel drive.
Oh, yeah. And you look at this. Now, to me, what this looks like, it looks like the old Lamborghini truck. You remember
the
LM002 or LM02 or whatever they called it, that was built in the late 80s and early 90s. It has that look. It has a similar body style to it. Or a Hummer or something like that, something very, very, squared off. It doesn't look a whole lot like, a boat does to me, at least in this photo anyways, because usually those are sleek, they have, more aquadynamic lines, I guess.
Yeah.
This has none of that. It seems like it's very, very squared off. Seems like it would be poor in the water, but you're saying that it can reach, speeds up to 65 kilometers per hour in the water. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty fast. The next one, this is another one that kind of blurs the line. It's got a strange appearance. It sort of looks like a Corvette. It's called the Hydra Spider.
Yeah.
And the reason it looks like a Corvette, I guess, is because it's built on a Corvette driveline. The Corvette LS2 6-liter V8 engine has around 400 horsepower and about 400 pounds-feet of torque. It does 125 miles per hour on the land. And on the water, it can get up to something like 53 miles per hour, which is 85 kilometers per hour.
Mm-hmm.
again, it looks a little bit like a Corvette, but there's something a little off about it. You know,
there's a little uncanny valley.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I mean, the wheels retract again, of course. That's one thing that makes it look odd. It looks like it's going very fast in this photo that we're looking at here, but it almost appears like it's doing it the way that the tail is coming up off of this. It looks like it's almost doing a burnout on the water surface, doesn't it?
Yeah, it
looks,
does.
Like smoke almost. But so that doesn't look out of place. But the front end looks so strange. There's a little difference to it. It's like there's, you know, vents where there shouldn't be vents, and mm-hmm. You know, cutouts where there shouldn't be cutouts. Mm-hmm. And of course, the wheels retracted. That makes it look strange. But again, it has kind of a Corvette look to it. It's not terrible, not awful. And again, fast on land, fast on water.
Yeah,
blurring the lines again.
I'm interested to see, with that in mind, I'm interested to see what you think about the next one on our list after a word from our sponsor. And we have returned Scott Benjamin. What do you think about number three, the Dauberton Hydro car.
Oh, boy.
You talked about a weird-looking front end.
The Dauberton Hydro car. Now, this is a custom-built, of course. And, boy, I don't like this at all. It's just too much going on there.
It's too much for you?
Well, number one, it's yellow. It's school bus yellow. That's strike one against it in my book. A lot of people might like that, but I'm not crazy about it. It's an amphibious vehicle that it's got a strong engine. It's got a Chevy engine that has 762 horsepower. It's a strong car. It's a strange looking vehicle. I mean, it's fully enclosed with glass.
Mm-hmm.
Very angular. I don't know how better to describe this. It looks like it's got pontoons on the side almost, really.
It looks like it could, I guess I can describe it for some of the nerds in the audience. It looks like it could be in a Japanese anime.
It does, yeah. Everything is a sharp angle on this car. Mm-hmm. It's got a great big spoiler on the back, almost like the Lamborghini Countach would have.
I like it. It's a lot, but it's got a really smart design.
You too. Do like it?
Yeah, I like
it. Oh, really?
It. Yeah, I like stuff like this.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
I mean, I probably wouldn't make it my daily driver just because I don't usually have to drive through lakes.
Yeah, get this. This car also sold on eBay for $130,000, despite not even being complete. The builder said that it wasn't completely dialed in, so they weren't getting the maximum out of that 762 horsepower that they have under the hood there. But said it just needed a few things to kind of, you know, polish it, to make it a final product.
Mm-hmm.
But $130,000, would you pay $130,000 for that?
No, I mean, obviously I wouldn't, but
you buy a better boat, right? Like, you just buy a really cool boat and a really cool car.
That's true. I would probably skimp a little on the boat, to be honest.
Now, this is just our opinions, right? I mean,
these are just opinions.
Check it out. See, that's exactly why I want listeners to kind of follow along with this list, because the Dauberton Hydro car is, I think, one that would
be a little divisive.
Exactly. Yeah. You're either going to love it or hate it, I think.
So what I'm really impressed with, though, is the ingenuity inherent in the engineering here, like the sponsons raising to become fenders and then lowering to create the hull. I think that's kind of cool.
Okay.
I see. We can agree to disagree.
Well, no, I mean, it's creative. I'll give them that. And, you know, yeah, the person who put this together, they clearly spent a lot of time, you know, thinking about this and doing this and put a lot of effort into it. I don't want to, rain on that parade by any means, but it's not for me. That's all.
Here's another weird looking one. You know what? That's why more, Dauberton Hydro cars for me, my friend.
I think there's just one.
Well, I'm going to get a fleet of them together. I'm going to contract out to FedEx and Uber.
Smart, real smart.
Yeah.
All right. So what about number two on our list here, the Sea Lion?
The Sea Lion is interesting because the manufacturer or the guy who designed the car does not want it to be called a car, really. He calls it an amphibious world speed record competition vehicle.
Mm. Wait. Say that again. An amphibious
world speed record competition vehicle.
Oh, okay.
It's just designed to set world records on land and on water.
Well, I mean, it's okay. It's not too far off from some of the other vehicles that we've seen, though. It might be a little faster. I think it's able to achieve 60 miles per hour on water.
Yeah.
And I think it's 125 miles per hour on land. So again, not terribly impressive compared to the even the other vehicles on this list. So it's not like it's a you know, a clear record breaker. The thing I do like about this one is that it seems to me, it almost looks like, and you have to kind of squint when you look at it this way, but it almost looks like someone dropped a McLaren into the lake. I mean, it has that McLaren look to it, that the same type of shape as a modern McLaren has.
Mm-hmm, like the low slung lines.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly, but it's close. It's close enough. And then it's got this really weird front end on it. And I would guess that's for wave busting or wake busting.
Yeah. I mean, I think so.
It's so it doesn't, you know, the waves don't just wash right over the front of the vehicle and submerge it.
But again, when you initially look at the vehicle, everything we know about auto construction makes us think that the guy is sitting backwards in it.
It kind of does look that way. Yes. Yeah. It sure seems that way.
But still, I like that it's built just to beat world records. We have one more on the list here.
Yeah. And then we've got a little, kind of a fun thing at the end.
Yeah. A little anecdote for everybody in the audience.
Yeah. So we're not going to wrap up with this final thing here, but this is the last one on our list.
Is it a Jeep?
Yeah. It kind of looks like a Jeep.
Is it a speedboat?
No, it's not exactly a speedboat. It is Watercar's Panther amphibious vehicle. Now, the Panther is was actually a California-based car company that designed this, and they designed it. Okay, here it is again, Ben, the world's fastest amphibious car. They all claim this, right? Or
right.
They all want to be the world's fastest.
Yeah.
But for 13 years, this guy named Dave March, he was the founder of Panther, dreamed about building a car that would perform equally well in water as it did on land, like a lot of these guys do, mm-hmm. a lot of guys and girls do. He wanted a car that would reach freeway speeds in the water, and the result was this Watercar Python. Now, this is the first amphibious car in the world that reaches road speeds over 125 miles per hour and water speeds of at least 60 miles per hour. Now, where have we heard that three or four other times in this list?
Right, right. All right.
So maybe he was the first to reach it, though. I don't know what year that happened or anything, but it's funny that they all want to be the fastest, but they all ended up at the exact same spot. 125 on land, 60 on water.
Yeah, you're right.
Kind of funny, isn't it?
I wonder if there's a hard engineering limit.
I don't know. I don't think that there is, really. I mean, it seems like it would be unlimited. But the last one that we saw had almost 800 horsepower, and it was achieving the same thing. Ben, there's one quick thing that I want to add before we kind of wrap it up on this vehicle, before we get to our final thing.
Uh-huh.
This one, you know when you fly, if you ever fly and you look at those catalogs that have kind of luxury items, ridiculous items that are always priced really, really
Sky
high.
Sky Mall?
Yeah, something like that. I think, and there's a company that sells this stuff, and it's called Hammacher Schlemmer. And I hope I didn't get that name terribly wrong. I'm sure I did, but they have a lot of just really high-end luxury items, you know, like these one-off type things. One of the things they sell in that catalog, I guess, is the Watercar Panther. They have sold in the past, and it was priced at $155,000 in that catalog.
Ooh.
So high ticket item. But it has
like US dollars or Ben bucks?
I think that's US dollars.
Oh boy.
But it has, let's see, it has a 26 gallon tank and a 160 mile range, on a 300 horsepower Honda engine. But again, it does have kind of a Jeep look to it, doesn't it? And it looks like a boat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's again, one of those vehicles that, I think we're talking Uncanny Valley area here with this one.
I do have to mention one thing. I would be remiss if we did not mention this.
Okay.
Before we wrap up.
All right.
So we talked about the Dobberton Hydro car, a little bit divisive, has some brilliant design aspects to it. That's not the only Dobberton out there. It's a guy named Rick Dobberton who builds these things, mm-hmm. and he built one that we talked about with an episode we did on RVs. Which you may recall, I'll show you the picture, the Dobberton Surface Orbiter.
Oh, I do remember that.
It's a converted milk truck. You guys got to check it out if you haven't seen it before. It has a really weird, all shiny chrome design.
Looks like something out of the old Flash Gordon movies.
Yeah, it looks very 1940s sci-fi, right?
Looks like a spaceship.
Yeah, and apparently the story was he wanted to circumnavigate the globe with this thing, and he built it up from pretty much from scratch. I mean, it took a milk truck container.
Well, I can't see where there's a milk truck underneath that thing at all. It's tough to see.
Yeah, but that's still one of my favorites. It's just a beast.
Yeah, it's a cool vehicle. You know what? And okay, now I'm going to add one other thing.
All right.
We just talked about the Water Car Python, right?
Yeah.
Water Car also has their newest vehicle is called the Fire Rescue, and it's built, it kind of looks like a Jeep Wrangler or something like that. But it is a fire safety boat, and it's a U.S. Coast Guard approved fire safety boat, and it pumps water right from the lake surface that you're on. So they drive into the water and they pump the water from the lake onto the fire if it's nearby. Like, so this would be perfect for like a marina use or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Easy to deploy, either on land or on the water. It's a really a smart design. If you look up water car and look up fire, I think it's called the fire rescue vehicle or something like that. It's their newest vehicle, but it can pump 1,050 gallons per minute out of this thing. So it's like a genuine fire boat almost. But it's this Jeep based vehicle that you can then just drive out if you need to. And of course, that's good for fighting fires, on land, nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a lot of applications. It's not just on water use. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. And so we see that although amphibious vehicles have often been treated as novelties, or toys, they do have real world applications, not, search and rescue, of course, military applications that continue today.
And who would have ever guessed that, the first one was in 1770?
The first
powered one was in the 1890s, I think. Mm-hmm. And then the first real amphibious car, I guess, was around 1905. But then in the 1920s, all the way through about the 1960s, they were actually fairly popular. I mean, if you can call them popular. I mean, there weren't a lot of them around ever, but that was probably their heyday, I suppose. Maybe, the 20s to the 60s. And probably the 1960s more so than that, because there were strange concept vehicles that were out there. There was one. Oh, man, I got a note here that I wanted to mention. A guy named Brooks Stevens, he's an industrial designer, created something called the Evinrude Lakester. And it was a concept from 1970. And this was a dune buggy that you would drive a speedboat into. Like you would drive if you look at this, you'll understand what I mean. It's like a boat that has a dune buggy chassis around it. So you could deploy the speedboat if you wanted to. It's a cool design. It's a neat idea. You'd have to check it out. You can find it on Hemmings Daily if you want to look it up.
And of course, as you know, longtime listeners, ladies and gentlemen, Scott and I typically walk out of every episode with a bunch of things that we didn't get to or that we remember when we're walking out of the door. But by gum, by golly, as people used to exclaim in the 1950s, there was one story that was so cool that we could not forget it. The Amphicar had some famous fans. Perhaps one of the most famous here in the United States was none other than President Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah, he had his own Amphicar. And the funny thing is, I guess, he liked to prank people in this vehicle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Ben, tell us a little bit about what this prank involved.
So he had a ranch in Stonewall, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
He was, it was pretty big property, right? And so what he would do, is he would take his friends, quote unquote, or people visiting him, right?
Mm-hmm.
He would take them for a ride around the ranch.
In the Amphicar.
In the Amphicar, which, a lot of people aren't familiar with.
No, they wouldn't have known.
It looks just like a regular, it looks mostly like a regular car. So he would drive people around, and say, oh, this is the valley here, and we grow this here, we raise livestock here, et cetera. And
yeah, tour the ranch.
Tour the ranch.
Sure.
And then there would be a steep incline toward the edge of a lake on the property, and then he would let the car just like roll rapidly toward it, and he would make a big deal kind of like stepping on the floorboard going, the brakes don't work. The brakes won't hold. We're going in. We're going under. And then it would hit the water.
You could imagine people panicking. Oh,
here.
Yeah. They're probably panicking in the car, right? But then he would twist this on them too, right? At the end, like when he would, of course, laugh and have a great time with this once, they realized the car was floating and propelling itself through the water as it was designed to do.
One last twist.
Yeah. The last twist would be that he would then turn it on the person that he had just taunted or had just
traumatized.
Yeah, traumatized by saying, hey, you don't even care about your president. You were going to save your own skin. You're like, what about me? I'm the president of the United States. You know, like, it's like your first thought was to save yourself in that situation. So it's like he's testing them almost. But what an unusual test, huh?
He just sounds like a person – it sounds like it would be really stressful to hang out with him.
I mean, it's not a bullet. You know, it's not like you're taking a bullet for the guy.
Sure.
He wasn't asking you to jump in front of a rubber bullet like as a test or something, you know, like a fake out. But what would you do if you were in a car barreling down towards a lake? I mean, you'd think, well, this is it. This, you know, this might be the end of us right here. Of course, well, our listeners wouldn't think that was it because they know how to save themselves.
Well, yeah.
In
no,
a car
you guys
that has
are
gone
way
underwater.
Too alert for that. Yeah. Would I be would I be in the car with the president of the United States?
More specifically, would you ever get in the car with Lyndon Johnson?
Now, I'd be kind of freaked out.
Well, now, even then, probably not. That guy had quite a reputation.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I would like to think that I am the kind of person who would save any president because, you know, any president of a country.
Well, yeah, but you know what's funny, though, is like, you know, when he's twisting on him saying, like, you didn't even think about me or care about me, there's really nothing you can do from the passenger side. I mean, the driver is the one that's in control or out of control.
Right. It's not like they're being attacked by a tiger.
What are you going to do, drag your feet and try to slow the car down? I mean, that's not going to work. I mean, it's just a crazy situation.
And I think it was an open-air vehicle, too. I don't think it had a top.
No.
So
no.
Anyone could jump out.
I think you could get a top for them, but this was a convertible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a strange idea.
Well, it's
well, a funny prank.
It's still pretty
funny. I guess.
Funny.
I think
it's
it is,
still
yeah.
Kind of funny.
I
mean,
there's some pretty good pranks that have been played in the past by some significant historical characters. And this is one of them, I guess, right? It goes down in the history books.
And imagine if you had an amphicar. Can you blame anyone for doing what is honestly just a spot-on great prank?
And, you know, I think he did this regularly. It wasn't like a one-time thing either.
I feel like word probably got around.
Yeah.
And there were people who were pretending to be scared because they wanted to get on his good side.
Oh, they're expecting it.
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, yeah. You got me,
Mr. President. You should pretend as if you're going to save his butt at that point, you know, like, you know, what would you do?
I guess what you would try to do is pick the president, probably, I don't know if he's wearing a seatbelt, but pick the president up like by his armpits or something, like, you know, like the way you save drowning people.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And then do the lifeguard swim to get him back to shore.
All the while he'd be yelling at you because now the car is
pretty sure he would be PO'd.
Motoring off on its own without a driver.
Yeah. Then you would be.
See,
ruining
there's no,
the guy's car.
There's no winning.
There's no winning.
There's no winning.
No
in this
winning with this guy.
But
we do hope that you have enjoyed our exploration of amphibious vehicles in a little more detail than previously. Again, we want to thank Rudy for the recommendation. And most importantly, we want to recommend that you check out some of our other episodes on weird and unique vehicles. Again, I'm not letting it go, Scott. A chronoplane.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
And we have an episode on the Sherp, which is another type of amphibious vehicle. And there's an all-terrain vehicle. Mm-hmm. We have an episode on how to get out of a car if it goes underwater.
Oh yeah, which is good.
That's a valuable one.
Listen to that in advance.
Yeah.
don't try to check that out on the website. When your car hits the water, unless it's an amphicar, then you have time.
Well, sure.
You can find all of those episodes, along with every audio episode Scott and I have ever done, on our website, carstuffshow.com. You can also find a lot of stuff that doesn't make it to the air for one reason or another on Twitter and Facebook, where we are CarStuffHSW. And, oh, Scott, do we want to stick with Splash, or do we have a different nickname?
I'll stick with Splash. I haven't come up with anything better.
Oh, all right. Okay. Yeah. All right. You lucked out this time, Alex. I mean, Splash. And this ends our episode, however, not our show. Tune in next week as we bring you more of the stuff that floats, flies, swims, or drives. And that brings me to an important point. We'd like your help. Our best suggestions come from you. Well, that's nice, you might say. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Ben. But how do I get these to you? I'm so glad you asked. You can email us directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.